on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you may be. Welcome along to another edition of The Orient Hour. I'm Andy Gilson in the studio. What's happened this week is that Glenn and Barry and Stu have been in a conversation with a few guests. We've got Martin Bellum and Andrew Butler, amongst others, that they'll be talking to. Dave and Matt will be coming up shortly from Blundell Park with their report and their view of things. And what it was Glenn and the lads, they had a discussion earlier via Zoom. So on these Zoom things, basically, there is a slight delay when they're talking to each other. So do bear that in mind when you're listening to it. So the whole show is pretty much on a Zoom for you tonight. And the good news is that come mid-April, some of the restrictions are going to be lifted on the studio. So we'll be having more studio based shows, so a little bit more like normal, thank goodness. So in the meantime, though, let's kick off this evening with Dave and Matt at Blundell Park, and then we'll pass over to Glenn and the boys.
Well, Matt, a winning start for Joby McEnough.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic for him to secure 3 points in his first game as Orient manager, an important one as well. A scrappy game, but I think the O's were fully deserved of the 3 points. The better team on the night showed a lot more quality, and in the end they looked comfortable throughout.
Very positive from the start, James Brophy in a forward position, causing all sorts of problems for the Mariners.
Yeah, as we know, James Brophy can do that. He was twisting and turning, as you say, causing the fullback issues. And again, Dan Kemp, another one that impressed me. I thought the front three always look a threat and look as though they're going to create, and they did so this evening.
They did, and as you say, Dan Kemp twice denied by the woodwork.
Yeah, he was unlucky not to find the back of the net. I think Dan Kemp seems to be growing in terms of his Orient shirt and really looking better and better as each game goes on.
Turley came off the bench to score at the weekend, and in the centre of the defence he was solid, wasn't he, especially after the early injury to Adam Thompson.
Yeah, it was a big call tonight because Joby McEnough obviously made a couple of changes. One of them was Joe Widdowson, who I have to say I thought was superb at left back, put in a real shift tonight, a man who's not played much football. Jamie Turley's another one, so between them to come away with a clean sheet, they'll be absolutely delighted with that.
Joby McEnough is a positive man, isn't he? He's somebody that has very high standards for himself, and somebody that will expect the players to rise to the occasion now.
Yeah, he commands respect, doesn't he, in that dressing room. It's very difficult going from a player to a manager, but I think it was interesting listening to his interview on the Orient website, how he set out his instructions, what he wants from the players. He's got a massive job ahead of him. The goal that's been set by the board is the playoffs. After tonight's winner, he's probably going to need 10 wins out of 15 games to secure 72 points. That will probably be enough to get there. So he's a big task ahead, but he's off to a winning start.
Last time we were here, it was Ross Embleton with a 4-0 victory. And Ross, you know, he's done so much for this club. He was such an important part for Justin's team that gained promotion, such an important promotion. And then after Justin's passing, he showed such courage and leadership, and I thought at the start of the season, up until that self-isolation, late night had the momentum, and it seemed to be the isolation that meant that that momentum was disappeared and never quite got it back.
Yes, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think you'll go really hard to find someone who has got a bad word to say against Ross Embleton. He for me, carried this club through with real credibility, particularly after Justin's death. And from that moment on, I just wonder whether perhaps the expectations at the start, we knew it was all about an improvement. That was clearly what Nigel Travis had asked for him. I think Ross Embleton will look back, and if you compare the games where he left the club 30 games in, he had secured more points than last year. So we had seen an improvement, but I think the board perhaps have wanted more. There's been a change of direction. They want the playoffs, and they felt that the change was right. But for me, Ross Embleton can leave with his head held high, a fantastic attribute this club has had, and will certainly certainly be welcomed back by everyone.
Absolutely, and you know, he's a man that everybody holds the absolute respect for, and we wish him every success in the future. Finally, I don't suppose you were ever fortunate enough to see Glenn Roeder as a player, but you know, Glenn Roeder was exceptional. He was a graceful player. He had a presence on the pitch. He had a turn of pace. He seemed to sort of rewrite the books for a central defender, and as a manager, he was ahead of his time. I remember West Ham United, he seemed to know the names of not all, of every single member of staff there. An absolutely astonishing man, and somebody that will be missed.
Yeah, very sad, isn't it? Another Orient legend passing away. And as you mentioned, there's so many memories there. Of course, at my age, you didn't get to see Glenn Roeder live, but you can just tell from watching the footage. You look at the semi-final, the Chelsea game. You can look at so many different video footage of players like Glenn Roeder, clearly well thought of as a club legend. It's terribly sad for his family, obviously, at this difficult time. So, very sad news, but... yeah, as I say, it will certainly live long in the memory of Orient fans.
He certainly will. Thanks, Matt.
So that was Dave Victor's view with Matt from last night's game at Grimsby. Thank you very much for that, Dave and Matt. Always good to hear your voice. Now, joining me on this week's Orient Hour, we've got our usual panellists, Stuart Minchin. How you doing, Stuart?
Yeah, very good, mate. Thank you. Very good.
It's good. Barry Lakin, how you doing, Barry?
Well, it's all good, mate. Nice to see you / hear you.
Likewise. And our guests this week are Andrew Butler from The Face, the gorgeous face from Orient Life TV. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm very well, thanks, Glenn. That's awfully kind, but we all know I'm the third favourite face on Orient Life.
I wouldn't say that, mate, after the abuse I get. And also, we're really privileged... Martin Bellum joining us, taking time out of his busy schedule. How you doing, Martin?
Yeah, very good. Thanks very much for inviting me. Much appreciated.
No problem. No problem at all. Right, so we'll start a show. We've got lots of topics to discuss today, but let's start with the sad passing of ex-Orient player Glenn Roeder. Obviously, we heard this week that he's passed. Glenn, for those who didn't know, started his career at Orient in 1973, and he was with the club for 5 years, making 115 appearances before going off having a great playing career elsewhere. And then he returned to the club back in 92, making 8 appearances, and I think he was struggling with injuries back then, so that's why it was only 8. Very sad news, and he will be sorely missed. Does anyone want to add to that? Anyone got any memories of Glenn?
Yeah, I'm old enough to just about dimly remember him playing for Orient in the 70s. My dad is actually a West Ham fan, so I used to go over Upton Park a lot, but we always came over Brisbane Road when West Ham played Orient when they were both in the second division then. And then I didn't start going to Brisbane Road in earnest till the early 90s, but that was when Glenn came back. So I would have seen him then. I think most people probably remember as well, you know, how he fell ill just at the end of the season with West Ham when they were in the middle of a relegation struggle. And I think everybody in the football world, you know, their hearts really went out to him to be in that position. And he recovered and went on to manage again at Newcastle. And reading about him again this week, I was reminded that while he was there at Newcastle, they won the Intertoto Cup by virtue of being the team who'd qualified for the UEFA Cup via the Intertoto and had then gone the furthest. And it was just making me laugh and thinking of his face that UEFA presented Newcastle with a certificate on the pitch for getting through there. And it's such a funny image. And I think often with old players, we wonder how they would have coped in the modern game. And I think he was such a cultured player on the ball in defence that actually he would have thrived with the way that teams tend to play out more from the back now. And I know there'll be a lot of Orient fans that are older than me who have great memories of him playing from the 70s. It's very, very sad news. He was very young.
Yeah, rest in peace, Glenn Roeder. Right, let's move on to E10 this past week. Lots going on. I think we've got to start really with the parting of company, let's say, of Ross Embleton. Before we go into that, we've just heard that in the last couple of hours, Ross has released a statement through the League Managers Association. So over to you, Andrew. Could you read that out for us, please?
Yeah, of course. So Ross on the LMA website says, "I would like to go on record and thank Leyton Orient Football Club for an incredible 3.5 years. When I returned in July 2017, we had just 9 young players. I was the only member of the coaching staff and we barely had any equipment to run a training session. I'm proud to leave the place a high-performing football environment. The young and talented staff deliver an incredible standard of medical practice, sports science, analysis, coaching and plans for recruitment. Had someone told me before how emotional and exciting my time at the club would be, I would not have believed them. I doubt I'll ever be challenged again with anything similar. Following the incredibly sad time we endured losing Justin Edinburgh, we then, like other clubs, had to cope with the turbulent time of managing through a pandemic. However, as well as the challenging times, I've taken so much from my time as manager of Leyton Orient. At the club, I have pretty much had every coaching role possible, from football in the community officer to head coach. Along with the memories, I take with me a National League winner's medal and leave behind a stabilised League Two club. I'd like to thank the board for all the opportunities given to me, all the staff, the players, the fans, and my wonderful family, friends, and those people that have stuck by me when I've really needed their support. I wish the club every success for the future."
Yeah, nice words. Can't argue with any of that, can we? So, for me, the writing was on the wall. I think, personally, I think from Ross's body language and his last few interviews, I think he was under pressure from above, and obviously the performances on the pitch. I think he sort of knew he was in the firing line, you know, so to speak. It is a real shame. I know Ross personally. I believe that he was a victim of his own success, so to speak, with before the season, getting into the sort of playoff positions. And I think we overachieved, if I'm honest, getting up into sort of seventh place. And the expectation level rose. And then obviously we got on that bad run of form and he stuck to his beliefs. He stuck to his philosophy of playing the way he wanted the team to play, which I think that's what sort of done it for him, you know, because I don't think he wasn't as prepared to change formations or his approach to the game to get out of that spell. And I don't know, maybe I'm being unfair on Ross, but that was my point of view. Martin, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I'd echo what you say there. I think the thing that struck me was that with the Port Vale game, it was difficult to watch and it was a dull game and a dull result. And at the end of it, he said we'd dominated the game. And I think you could make a case that we'd put a lot of pressure on in the last 15 minutes, but I didn't feel you could say it was a performance where we dominated. And so then we went to Bradford and he put out the same 11 players in the same shape. And I felt he must have said in the dressing room, "Come on, lads, you owe us a performance here." You know, he stuck with the team and he stuck with the formation. And he didn't get that performance from Bradford. You know, and again, it's fine margins. And maybe if we hadn't conceded the penalty, we'd have got away with a draw. And I noted from social media that a lot of Bradford fans were full of praise for us for being well drilled and very hard to break down, you know, which were things that we maybe weren't seeing ourselves as a fan base because we were so focused on the fact that we weren't creating chances and we weren't scoring goals. But to then put the same team out again at Tranmere, you feel like it didn't seem like he was giving himself any options, nor was he able to raise the performance level of the players. But I must confess, I was a little bit surprised that he went in the end, because my reading of it was that the board were going to be happy if we finished a little bit higher up the league than we had last season. You know, so we finished 17th. So if we were comfortably mid-table, I kind of felt that they would look at that as that's reasonable progress in a difficult season. But I guess with the things that Nigel says in the interviews, that's not the case at all. And they'd see they have a much more ambitious plan for this season. But yeah, as I say, just those last couple of games, he just didn't seem to have that flexibility, nor did it seem that giving the challenge to the players was getting a result for him.
Yeah, no, I agree. Stuart, what's your view on that?
Had he gone as far as he could possibly go? There's arguments. Is it, you know, was he a better coach than a manager? He had a go at doing the manager a bit, but did it get too far, too much. And in actual fact, you found out that Ross was actually a better coach than he was a manager. He will probably say, you know, give you the answer to that. I think he's, like you know, Glenn and Barry especially, he's an exceptional coach, very, very good. But when you're a coach and then becoming a manager, it is very, very different. And I think we saw it with Justin. Justin didn't do a lot of coaching. He kind of stood back, but he managed. And I don't know if that was the same for Ross or not, that if Ross was coaching as well as trying to manage, and ultimately that could have been his downfall, that he had people there as well to coach who maybe weren't coaching as much as they may have wanted to or have liked to, because obviously Ross was doing that part of it as well. And again, I could be a million miles wrong, but I kind of think he'd probably gone as far as he probably could go. I just always find it hard. You can relate to someone like Ross a lot. He's Orient. He's an Orient fan. Everything was done for Orient because Orient was his club. And I find that quite hard. And you always do think it's difficult when you've got like that relationship, or you know someone's got that relationship with the club. It's just not another job. And that's where I find it quite hard with Ross, that he has gone and he's gone now, because he was, if you like, Mr. Orient, wasn't he?
Yeah. Barry, as a ex-player, what's your view on that? His final sort of 2-3 games and the decisions that he made on the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, it's all speculation. It's all personal opinions. But I think what Stuart said there was probably now in the head for me. It's a massive difference between coaching and managing. Bear in mind, Ross coached the team out of the National League, right? So it might have been difficult for him to let the coaching reins go as well as take on the managerial side, because you are a different animal to a manager. You do have that line that you can't cross, which I've heard Joby say, you know. So from a player's point of view, it's one of those things where if you're losing matches and things don't change, you know, it's going to happen, isn't it? Because the drum was beaten a lot from the social media side. I think COVID has a bit to do with that, because people can't get out, they're angry even more so on their keyboards. And I feel for Ross, because he is Mr. Orient, and I just think it's probably a shame that there wasn't a manager there for him to continue to coach. His age is similar. You know, he's in and around the same age as Joby, some of the other players, you know. So, and he's also been the coach. As a coach, you're generally the player's best mate. And as a manager, you're not, you know. Even the players that like you as a manager, it's nothing personal, it's just business. So I think it's a definite or difficult transition. And like you say, if you're not going to change it, and he didn't change it, which is, you know, that's where he was strong to himself. But the drum was beating. We kept on with the 4-3-3. Kept on with Brough's playing left back. So obviously he didn't like playing left back, because his first game out of Ross's eye shot, he's playing left midfield, left wing.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in a minute. Let's, Andrew, have you got anything to touch on, Ross, before we move on?
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty much all been covered. But I think the points of perhaps he ended up being possibly a bit too dogmatic, a bit too wedded to the idea of the 4-3-3. It's a shame, because eventually the buck's got to stop somewhere. And actually, against Tranmere, you look at the goals that you concede, and they're all individual errors. I think it's a combination of Cease and Happy for the first goal. Thompson gets robbed of it for the second goal. And you know, the irony being that I think it's Joby who loses his man for Tranmere's third goal. And kind of that performance ends up being a bit of a reflection on the manager rather than on the individuals, especially after a series of seven games with no wins and only two goals in that. So, yeah, I think it probably was the straw that broke the camel's back in the end. And whilst it's a difficult decision, I think it probably is the right one. But, you know, just to echo kind of what Stuart was saying and Barry as well, I think history will be really kind to Ross. As he said in his statement, he's got a National League winners' medal. He's established Orient back as being a solid League Two club, and it's a really decent foundation for us to build from.
Yeah, a good man, a good coach. Sadly, no longer a part of his boyhood club. Right, so Sunday, Joby's appointed. He's got probably one morning, possibly two mornings, training, coaching his new squad. Before we move on to Joby a bit later, let's go straight into last night's game away to Grimsby. The team lineup. He's made three changes, obviously taking himself out of side for Craig Clay. Joe Widdowson dropped into left back, pushing Brophy forward. And Jamie Turley has come in and started alongside Mr. Thompson. So what did you think of the lineup? Let's go to Martin.
Yeah, I don't think it's a surprise that he made those changes. I worry a little bit how much we might miss his influence on the pitch for the rest of the season. I know we will obviously be encouraging from the sidelines, but he has, over the last couple of seasons, had such a cool head on the pitch for us whenever we've been in trouble, and just like set such a great example. So I do worry a little bit that we'll lose that. I have to laugh because I feel like I've been the only person in the Orient fan base who wasn't that fussed about Brophy playing at left back, because I always look at it as that meant that we had someone who could come up on the left on an overlap who you knew could actually put a decent ball into the box. Unlike often, and no offence to Joe Widdowson, but we've seen a lot of defenders over the years at Orient who get into those positions and then can't put a decent ball into the box. So I was more relaxed about that than a lot of the fan base. I think it was interesting what Barry just said about perhaps the social media reaction to games being more vociferous because people are stuck indoors and they're not getting out to go to the matches. So I feel like there are a lot of people who were really, really hoping for a 4-4-2 rather than a 4-3-3. But the team did the job. I think that's that we can say about it there. I don't think it was an amazing step up in terms of performance if we're being really, you know, analytical about it. But it's a results business, and he must be delighted that he got a result on his first time.
Was any of you guys shocked by the omission of Dan Happy and Connor Wilkinson? And why do you think he made those changes? Let's go to you, Stuart.
I'm not surprised. I don't think Wilco's been in the best of form maybe in the last month. So it's never a bad thing to maybe take him out for a game or two. It makes him probably realise that his place isn't a guaranteed either. And you could argue the same for Dan Happ as well. And again, Dan may have some confidence issues, although to be fair to him, he didn't show it. But maybe being dropped last night and given the reasons why he was dropped last night, you know, was the right thing for him mentally as well, to then come back in as early as he did last night. He was faultless last night. But again, you know, what's going on in the background to players' confidence, mentality, etc., we don't know. So again, I think it was the right thing that Joby did last night to take those two out, definitely. I agree with what Martin's saying on Brophy. I was never that hooked up on the fact that he should be at left midfield instead of left back. The only thing I would say, it felt like last night that you had a traditional left back at left back, who was there to do a job at left back and defend. And it wasn't that he needed to get forward, you know, as priority, although he did from time to time. And so I liked it with Joe Widdowson back at left back, I'll be honest, and I did like it with Brophy at left midfield. But then it wouldn't surprise me if you do with Joby, who is quite flexible, that he might go horses for courses and he might put Brophy back at left back from game to game, dependent on opposition and their formation. one thing that kind of stood out for me last night, it wasn't a fixed 4-3-3 last night with, you know, Brophy and Kemp were more joining the three in midfield. So it became 3-4-5-1 scenario more times than not. And then I guess my only critique for that is that Dan Johnson seemed to be quite isolated at times on his own. And so if the ball did go up, it didn't stick and it was coming back quite quickly. So, and again, with the best will in the world, I didn't think it was probably Dan Johnson's best game last night. He didn't really have a lot to feed on. But then on the flip side, he did a fair bit of running, but, you know, the argument could be, was he trying to get into right positions to get himself into opportunities, which I couldn't see from looking at the stream that was probably possible. Whereas someone like Tristan, when he came on, he was only on for, what, 5-6 minutes. But his movement kind of dropping back, say, 5 yards off of their back line, looked like he looked far more kind of mobile across the width of the pitch at that time. Now, again, circumstance might be we're under a bit of pressure, et cetera, et cetera. So it's different and it's difficult with Tristan coming on. But I was impressed with Tristan for the 5 minutes that he was on. But I found it more, like I said, it was a 4-5-1 more than a 4-3-3.
Do you know what, everyone? Obviously, it's a major talking point this season with the formation and how it's up. Obviously, supporters, when it's going against us, they want a 4-4-2, and it's openly out there that we play 4-3-3. I have never, ever seen that system. Lucky enough and been fortunate enough to be at the home games along with Andrew on the Orient TV. I've never seen the 4-3-3 formation. It's always, in my eyes, been 4-1-4-1. That is the way they're set up, with Cis or Hector sitting in front of the back four, and then you've got the other four ahead of them, and then Johnson up front on his own. And to me, last night, it was exactly the same. But the difference I saw last night with the four players ahead was that they tucked in a lot more. Like you said, there was more flexibility with them, whereas Ross liked to have either Kemp wide left and Wilkinson wide right, and they stuck to the touch lines, and it left a lot of room in the middle. When the ball was on either side, it went back to like a 4-4-2 formation where the wider player tucked right in towards the middle to give that extra body in there. And Barry, did you see the game last night? What did you think?
Yeah, I did see the game. It was a shocking game. What a great game to watch. Formation, I felt 4-3-1, like you said, 4-1-4-1. I'm a little bit old school in the fact of the pitch was really poor. And we're still trying to knock it around. And I just think sometimes you've got to play to the pitches. And I think you've got the players there with Tristan, Abrahams and DJ to put two up top. He's a big lad, Tristan. You know, you saw him some goals. It could be a good outlet. I'm not saying you've got to smash it forward all the time. But, you know, it's going back to a bit of a territory game. Push them back. Can we turn them? And then we start playing, you know, middle to their third rather than knocking it around the back. And we're getting closed down. It's because you've got to watch the ball onto your foot on these pitches. I know on the TV sometimes they don't look as bad, but you know you have to have that extra second, and that can count from getting closed down.
So I think you're spot on, and I think that Joby, well, I don't know Joby, but I think they looked at the pitch. He had his way that he wanted to set up, but I think they looked at the pitch, and that determined how they played even more. Be interesting to see how he sets up at Exeter on Saturday. But like you say, the pitch was absolutely terrible last night. And we saw that with Kemp when he's hit the bar in the first half. I think that's taken a little bobble and he's probably scared of the pitch. The biggest chance for me, what we missed, was in the second half when Freeman's squared one across the box to DJ. And either DJ's completely missed it, which I don't think that's happened. The ball's gone through his legs, or it's taken a bobble just before he's made contact. So I think Joby's probably adjusted the way we play, and you're totally right. I think it was a territorial battle with get the ball forward and then pick up the bits, and can we play, get our bodies forward and play in and around them, rather than it's a nice pitch, let's play the possession football that we have been. But Saturday will be interesting. Andrew, how was it for you in the studio?
Yeah, I agree. I think the pitch would be an incredibly convenient excuse for Kempe, actually, with his two shots hitting the crossbar, because I think the second one might have taken a bobble too. If I was him, I'd definitely be playing that card too, because I think they're probably, you know, ones that on our pitch he probably should be scoring on any pitch. But pitch wasn't, you know, doesn't play to our strengths. We are a good team when we get the ball on the floor. I don't know if we have the capabilities to, you know, to switch it up, which is something that perhaps Joby needs to look at. We've got a decent plan A. I think our plan A would be really well, as we saw against teams like Newport, who, you know, poor Newport, they have a great pitch for 2 months of the season, then the rugby lads kind of completely ruin it for them. But we saw when we played them at our place, we played them off the park, and we have a really decent plan A in place. But our plan B kind of looks a bit disjointed. It can look a bit frantic at times. We did play long a couple of times, but it just looked like panic stations and just try and relieve pressure, because Grimsby were not up to much yesterday, and we kind of possibly played on that too much, to the fact that they weren't ever going to look threatening to play around us or behind us, kind of played into our favour. But against better teams like Exeter will be this Saturday, we have to be equipped to be playing a couple of styles of football, I think.
Yeah, I felt last night with the inclusion of Turley and Widdowson, he was going for strength and size in that back line. Obviously, we've spoken over the weeks about we've not been very good on set pieces this season. I know DJ scored his hat-trick goal from a corner. It seems like an age ago now, and Turley came on Saturday and got our sort of second goal from a corner. Last night, we got a few set pieces again, and we slung a few in the box and it didn't come off. And then there was a lot of variation with our set plays. Did that please you? Is that something do you think Joby's identified that in tight games on horrible pitches, if we're not taking our chances, set plays and set pieces are so, so important to get the victory you're after?
Yeah, I mean, I was personally really pleased with it. Just the manner in which we got our goal, because it came after, I think, a series of three corners in which we switched it up each time. Perhaps that is a reflection of Joby being a set piece taker himself. He recognises perhaps the opportunity that's there to be taken. Yeah, because that was a very pleasing way to get it in. So it'll be interesting to see where we go from there, because I think with routines, they can be quickly found out. I remember back in whoever was the manager would escape me, but in the kind of mid-2000s, I remember we tried out a couple of times where we had all the players on the goal line and then they would come out and then go back in again. It was pure kind of pre-modern football or pre-proper modern football of just trying out something for a laugh, it looked like at the time. But it was an incredibly interesting routine. But yes, they looked much more thought out than actually what we've had in the last few games, which is a bit of floating to the back post where Happy would try and get on the end of it.
I think that corner you were just alluding to, that's called the hokey cokey set play. Have you know? Obviously, you've not heard of that one before. Barry, as a player, as an ex-player, do you think players, if you give them too many set pieces and variations, do you think they're clever enough or receptive enough to take them on board and everyone knows where they should be? So if you, for instance, you've got four or five different set pieces from a corner in a game, everyone has to be bang on and know what their movement is and where they need to be. Do you think that's a good thing, or would you just keep it down to one or two?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, I'm a big follower of the NFL. You know, look at the number of plays they have to remember. Now, there's no shame in winning football matches from set plays, you know, unless you are kind of like Barcelona, Real Madrid, the top elite countries of teams. You know, look at, there's some high-profile Premier League who have won matches, so many points this season from set plays.
England, so, England World Cup, 2018 World Cup. We we almost won the World Cup through just set pieces.
Set plays, yeah. So why you would not want to have that in your arsenal to turn around and go, right, boys, set play one. You know, you train every day, maybe a day off, but you're training so many times. Why can't you spend an hour a day going through that and working out? This could be a 0-0 game, boys. If we nail this in the 85th minute, happy days. You know, it just gives you more hope and desire, because you're thinking, right, this is being a bit of a drab game. We can't get back. It's just going to like peter out. Where all of a sudden, you do a set piece from a free kick, a corner, even a throw-in. Now, the number of times you just see a throw and just throw it down the line, and that the opposition head it back to them. You know, so many when you've got the ball at a dead play, spot play, you're in control. It's an opportunity. I've always personally done this as a coach as well when I was coaching. Can we get a shot on goal even though we're taking a throw in from our final third? And that all comes down to the movement. The biggest issue you have is selling it to the players. If the players don't buy it, you have got zero chance of it ever happening.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm intrigued to know if they've been working on direct free kicks after the last few games where I think six free kicks have hit the wall. We didn't get to see any last night, but it'd be interesting to see if they've been inventive in and around the box with that. Martin, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to say about the free kicks thing, and I feel it's like one of the areas as well where not having the crowd has made a real difference, because I feel like once you've slammed three free kicks into the wall, there's no way you're going to slam a fourth. You'll at least take an option to take it short or do something other than have the crowd on your back. And just to pick up something you said about the formations as well, is that I do think it's been fascinating that the social media reactions are all based on most of us just seeing one TV angle. So the subtleties of what a pitch has been like or how windy it's been on a particular, like you haven't got that thing where there'll be a few fans maybe on Twitter saying, oh my God, it is really windy here, or you don't get anyone actually seeing that bobbly surface up close. And I do think that has changed the way that people have perceived the team have been playing this season. But yeah, it was good to see. You know, I felt yesterday they, aside from the changes in the team and everything, it did feel that they went at it a bit more than they had for the last few games. And I think fans needed to see that. I know Joby hasn't had long to make his mark on this squad, hardly any time at all, but it did feel that they went out and put in a little bit of an extra shift. And I think that's what we needed to, as well as the 3 points, we needed to see a bit of that last night as well.
I thought Grimsby were pretty poor, probably the poorest team I've seen this season. However, they were still in the game. Well, why it's 1-0, they're still in the game, and they go and hit the post, and the left winger sort of got in behind Tunji a couple of times, who I thought had a fantastic game last night. There was some worrying sort of moments, and listening to Joby's press conference afterwards, or I say press conference, his interview with Dave Victor, he mentioned that, and that's what he spoke to the players about. We have to be more clinical in and around them areas, because we need to put a game in. We can't allow that opposition to get that one chance and they score, and then we lose them 2 points that we thought we were going to get. Do you think it's concerning that the system, obviously, with DJ up front on his own? Last night, he's got, I think he had one opportunity where he's had that snapshot in the first half, which he's created himself and the keeper spilled it. Do you think he's getting enough service? And do you think it's a worry that he's not scored for 2 months? I know Andrew is going to come at me with some stats here. I know it has been 2 months. He has been injured, but it's still 2 months since his last goal. Is it a worry, Andrew?
Well, you say, look, okay, I'll come back at you with the stats. It's actually only 5 games. I know it's 2 months. It's only 5 games that he's been without a goal. But yes, that I suppose that would be a concern then, because those 5 games, the last 3 games, he's only had 3 shots in total. He's had 1 shot in each of the last 3 games, which, you know, as a striker, you have to say is not ideal. I know that kind of the system doesn't really lend itself to him taking on a load of shots. Connor's had the most amount of shots by a long distance this season for us. I did have a look at the stats actually. Over the course of the season, DJ's had 44 shots and scored 14 goals. I think that's just in the league. So he's a 1 in 3. Like, he's shot conversion rate, shot to goals conversion rate is 33%, which is kind of actually ridiculous. So the lack of shots is a concern, but he is also a sort of striker that doesn't really need many opportunities. Not scoring in five is probably just symptomatic of the fact that we haven't been scoring goals generally, full stop. And you know, our last two goals have both been scored by centre backs from set pieces too. So it would be nice to see him back on the score sheet. Of course, it just the one shot he had yesterday was a snapshot from outside the box on the half volley, was a nice clean hit, but he really hasn't been given any service. And you look back at the goals that he has scored this season, he's kind of made them himself. It's all been either nowhere near flukes, but I think about goals that he scored, I think maybe against Cambridge and Port Vale, where he's just been on the end of it. He's just been there. And it's like, and we praise him because it's like, yeah, brilliant, poacher's goal. But they've come around not from a deliberate play as such. They've come around from him being in the right place at the right time. Don't get me wrong, you know, I take those goals all day long because you know, we haven't been scoring that many goals of late. But yeah, he needs to get back on. Basically, we were playing well when he was scoring goals, and we were getting wins when he was scoring goals. If we're serious about pushing up to the playoffs, he needs to be scoring goals.
Stuart?
I think he's looked frustrated in the last five games, and that's evident from the string, from what you've seen. He's just looked frustrated. You go back to last season, you know, where he didn't really hit the ground running, but then he got a couple of goals where he was in the right place at the right time, you know, and they flick off the knee and in, and he'd probably love that again. You've got two different types of strikers, haven't you? You've got the very technically gifted ones, a bit like Connor Wilkinson, who will take a poke from outside the box, won't think twice. You go back to people like David Mooney, who was, you know, technically very good, who very rarely scored tap-ins. And the same can be said for Kevin Lisby as well. Kevin had a real variation on the goals he scored. Then you go to Macaulay Bonn, who was, again, someone that, you know, got his fair share of tap-ins because he was always in the right place at the right time, but also worked incredibly hard. I just see Danny Johnson is frustrated at the minute because he's not getting the bounce, and almost the shot he had last night was, you know, almost out of anger, you know. And look, he got it on target, so, you know, you can't criticise him, but he's had one shot last night and, what, three shots in the last three games. But he hasn't had. It's not like we've been in the box and the ball's come flashing across the box that many times that he knows that if he's missed one, he's got another one coming along 2 minutes later. And I think Barry, that's where he's probably struggled.
Yeah, yeah. Barry, do you think he will be worried himself?
I think, as Stu mentioned, I think the frustration will start to build up. And then when you're playing, if you're playing, you're frustrated, you start snatching at things. Your timing's slightly off. So it's kind of like you kind of manifest into that, and it grows and grows. The big point I've got so far taken, really, was what Andrew said about plan B. And that's where... Because if you're playing against Leighton Orient, you know they're going to pop it around to sit back and you hit them on a counter-attack. So that's where the plan B, I think, would help DJ if we did have another person up top with him or making them third-man runs, stretching the opposition. Because a lot of our players played in front of the back four. We very rarely do we stretch them. So now, hopefully, Joby might have seen that and they'd be working on a decent plan B because... You know, it's a good team. It's a good squad. You know, they've got the right the fundamentals are there. We just do need to see a kind of little bit. Let's play to the facilities and the pitch and the opposition rather than keep. I know it's about let's worry about ourselves. But if you really want to be that nitty gritty team that gets into that playoffs, you need to have a little bit more ammunition about you.
Do you know what? I think we saw that last night, though, because straight from the off, as soon as any of the defenders got the ball, usually they'll look for Cisse in that little pivot position to pass in the ball. And then that's where the opposition would set traps and target him and try and nick the ball. I think last night, from the off, the fullbacks and the centre-halves, as soon as they got the ball, they tried to go long and turn the opposition around and try to push them back, like we said earlier, and nick the ball. But I don't know if that's going to be how we play all the time going forward, or is Joby going to play to the conditions and the pitch, or to the opposition. So it'll be a smart thing to do if he does that, but obviously there's no sort of continuity of the way we play like we had before.
Well, you've got to have a bit of everything, really, haven't you? And that's the idea of a decent club, team, manager, where you identify and you've got to have your own DNA, but at the same time, you need to be able to mix it up. And I think launching balls into the opposition's half for DJ, he will get frustrated. He will get frustrated. He likes to pin players, roll with defenders, get shots off. Getting balls in around his neck, you know, to be challenging is not him. You know, and I've only seen him briefly this season, but he has scored a lot of goals at this level already. And you know, it's about down to that squad now to be led by Joby into getting to a good run of wins on the go.
Yeah, and last night we saw obviously the injury to Adam Thompson in the first couple of minutes. He went off. He refused the stretcher from the footage we saw. When he was down, his head was split open. And there was blood everywhere, which we thought that was the injury. But when he stood up, he limped off. And later, he sent a message out by Twitter with himself and his leg in a plaster cast on the coach. And it turns out he's got a fractured ankle. Now, we send our best wishes to him, and we hope he recovers very, very quickly, because he is needed and he's a good player. And personally, you don't wish injuries on anyone. But we're now down to two centre-halves fit, taking Tunji out of it because he's currently playing right back. We get a suspension or an injury, do you think it will be an easy choice to bring Sam Ling back in at right back and push Akinola in? Do you think they'll go that way, Martin?
Yeah, I mean, that feels like the most obvious way of doing it, doesn't it? Or of course, you know, you can bring the dreaded move of bringing Brophy back into a left back and upset all the fans. But I mean, so, you know, I feel we are blessed perhaps with more options there, more comfortable options there than we had before. But I do feel for Thompson, because he'd really had, I felt like he'd settled into the side. And I feel again that one of the things that I felt about the board is that we seem to have done better in January transfer windows than we have done in perhaps the summer. And I feel like it looks like we've got the makings of a decent January transfer window again. And I feel like, I know he missed a couple of chances that he shouldn't have last night, but I feel like Kemp's been industrious and has impressed me. Thompson has settled in well. Freeman feels like an improvement in midfield. And so I feel like, you know, we had done well. And I just also feel for Joby as well. It's like, your big night, your first game in charge, and you're sort of immediately dealing with what looked like, you know, a difficult injury within a couple of minutes and having to make a substitute. And he must have just, you know, in his mind, Joby must have had an idea of how he wanted the first half to go, and it wasn't Thompson fracturing his ankle after a couple of minutes. But yeah, it did look bad, and I do really feel for him, because he'd made a good start to his career here, and I don't know how long he'd be out now, but, you know, there's not that long left of the season to get your way back to fitness and get back into the team. So definitely wish him all the best, because it did look like a painful one.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know what? I think with him going off after 2 minutes, I think that probably helped us a bit, because Dan Happy played alongside Turley, who he's played with many, many times before, and Turley's not had the opportunity to play alongside Thompson. So even though they've trained together a bit, they wouldn't really know. They haven't got that relationship on the pitch, and they know where to go and movements, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it fell into our hands a bit that did happen. And obviously Dan Happy scores a winning goal. So,
well, statistically, it turns out that our best route to goal now is bringing a centre back on from the bench, isn't it? If you're like doing an inside baseball data driven thing, that's what you do now to break a deadlock. Yeah, it was, you know, I think it was interesting also for Joby to face that immediately. And one of the things I think about Joby as a manager that's quite interesting, I think, for us as a club now and for him personally, is I feel he's clearly one of those people who's been very comfortable doing his media work and has been very accomplished at it. And now he's having a go at at being a manager. And you often see with, you know, really, you know, great, articulate, intelligent players, you feel like Jamie Carragher chose to be a pundit and Stevie Gerrard has chosen to be a manager. You know, Jamie Redknapp has chosen to be a pundit and Frank Lampard Jr. has chosen to be a manager. And Joby feels like one of those players who could do either. And not many people get an opportunity to do both or even one of them. And I wonder if this next couple of months is also for him as much about working out what he wants to do with the next few years of his life, whether he wants that day in, day out of being a manager, or whether actually, you know, he's going to end up wanting to do the media work. And I don't think that's a negative thing. I think it's a positive thing, just saying that we know how intelligent and articulate he is. And that can sometimes be a rare thing for a footballer. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing, you know, what he does over the next few weeks.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Let's touch on Joby, because I know we haven't got too much longer left. What does he need to do to get the job permanently? I know Nigel on the Outlook podcast said that playoffs are the target, and on the club's YouTube channel, he said playoffs are the target. That's what we want to achieve. If Joby doesn't achieve that, what do you think he needs to achieve to get the job permanently? Andrew?
I mean, it's a really good question, because from the club's hierarchy point of view, is it... if he doesn't achieve playoffs, he hasn't reached the target. So therefore, we're going to get, a more, you know, in inverted commas, established manager in. And you kind of can say, well, that was the target all along. And you go public with that target, which is, you know, quite rare, I think, actually, to be so open to say this is where we want to be finishing, and reiterating that a couple of times. I think... what you want, and I think what as fans would want, is to have a confidence in the manager that he will be able to take the club forward. So say we just miss out on the playoffs, come 8th, 9th, 1 or 2 points outside the playoffs, does the club's ownership then think, well, he's taken us from 14th up to 8th, 9th, we've played a different style of football, the players seem to be responding to his level, then... is that good enough? I would say, personally, I'd say yes, because as we've seen in League Two, I mean, there's, and the amount of chopping and changing in League Two and League One this season, you know, Barrow have had, I think, 3 managers now. There's other clubs where they just chop and change. And to have a bit of consistency, I think, is the key thing in finding the manager, rather than just saying, right, well, we've had this guy. Because then what if Joby doesn't get the managerial role permanently? What then does he do? Does he go back to being a player at the same club, or does he hang up his boots? I don't know if he's good enough to stay on another season. Only he knows that. But we'll see. But in my opinion, yeah, just taking the club forward and having the confidence of fans, because I think actually what we were saying earlier about social media reaction, for better or worse, that does seem to play a part in the club's thinking.
Yeah. Barry, do you think it was an easy decision for the club to give Joby the job? Do you think that they're on a sort of hide into nothing, really? They're just, there you go. You're in the building. It saves us spending money on an unknown. We know what you're about. There you go.
I mean, I've got a player version, a coach, and a fans version. You know, whenever someone comes into a new position, as in Joby, and it's from within, and he's been part of the coaching staff, it always sits a little bit uncomfortable, because it there must have been, once again, speculation. There must have been things being said and done, even not being adhered to get himself into that position. So obviously, it's led to. So what is he going to do now that he wasn't offering Ross? Was Ross not listening to him, or is it the fact that we go, well, I'll keep that to myself because I can see things that happen on the cut. You just don't know. I've never met Joby. I've never met Ross. I find them both really, really speak brilliantly. Real good clubmen. I think the way Joby's first interview on the O's TV come across really, really well. As we know, football is a very, very, fickle industry. 1 minute you're in a job, next minute you're out. It could have been the easy option. I don't think, you know, what were the other options? Does anybody know?
No, that's what I'm saying. He's within the club. They haven't got to go out and find somebody external who has got to come in to sort of know the players, familiarise himself with the players, etc. So it made sense to me.
He's outlined. He's basically, as the story went, he's had his interview. He's outlined what he wants for the rest of the season. He speaks very well, as I've mentioned. Great experience. You know what a career he's had. And still to be keeping his body in that shape at 39. And he does run around a lot, as people keep laughing with me about. That's the first rule of football. So, you know, it's wishing him all the best. And it's going to be an interesting final 10 games or so to see what he's got. And it's going to start with Exeter, because that is a proper game now. Not Grimsby. Although Grimsby away, you know, can you win away on Grimsby on a Tuesday night? Tick. They're bottom of the league. Now you're playing someone who is fighting for promotion. So it's going to be a real, everything about the whole game, the selection, the way we play, the pitch. You know, hopefully we'll give a bit of an insight now, this show, of what we're going to look for in the game on Saturday.
Yeah, totally right. We're coming towards the end of the show. We've only got a few minutes left. But Stuart, one of the things I wanted to ask you was the players who are out of contract this season. The club mentioned before that they've got red, amber and green players. The green ones are that they know are going to keep. Amber, not decided. The red ones, they're not getting offered anything. Do you think with Joby now as manager on an interim basis, if he does well, do you think that will, Joby's view will change any of them players in the red zone or the amber zone or the green zone going either way? Do you think he's going to have a big influence on who they keep and should let go?
It probably speaks volumes last night that Jamie Turley was back in the starting 11, who has been in the dark for months, and who was probably in the red zone before Joby came in. The interim bit is, you know, they're not going to be starting talking to Jamie Turley if he's in the red zone. You know, or he might have moved to the yellow zone. If Joby might want to keep him, but if Joby's not manager at the end of the season because we didn't meet the target, then, you know, that's a difficult one. So I don't know how much it is actually going to change between now and the end of the season as to who's going to be moving across those three zones and who may be in a green zone and move back to a yellow zone or move even into a red zone. Only those guys are going to know that and how much input Joby will have. I mean, look, Joby's going to have his own opinions on the players and probably he's going to have quite a bit to say on if he was staying, who he would like to offer and who he would like to keep. So I don't know. And it's a bit like now, the pressure's on Joby in actual fact far more than you probably think for, because we're 9 points off the playoffs. And we're, what, 7 positions off the playoffs. That's quite a tall order. One of the things you've got to do is you've got to win games, and you've got to win far more games than you draw and you lose. I know that's obvious, but to get yourself close to that. So I think it's very, very difficult. And in some respects, with the games that we've got left, I think it's very hard to judge Joby ultimately, because if he fouls, like Andrew says, and he ends up 2 points out of it or 3 points out of it, where do you go?
Yeah, yeah. Right, guys, we're coming to the end of the show. I just want to thank you guys, obviously the O's travel to Exeter. I think it's a 1 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. The club have announced that the stream is free to season card holders. Obviously, non-season card holders can purchase their pass before the game and they get entered into the Papa John's free piece of draw. So you can do that. Head over to the Leighton Orient website for that. Andrew Butler, thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure, and I hope to see you soon.
Cheers, Glenn. Nice one.
Martin, really lovely to meet you and speak to you. And you're more than welcome anytime to come back on the show. Thank you very much for your input.
Thank you very much indeed. I'd love to come back. It's a really, really enjoyable thing to do.
Great stuff. Barry, Stuart, thanks, guys.
Well, I will.
All the best.
on the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.